Welcome to In The Mood For Podcast with Callum Reid of UltimateAddict.com and Pete Shepherd of InTheMoodForBlog.blog.co.uk.
Who is struggling to stay awake, I might add, at this late hour on a recording night, but we'll power through it.
How many films was it today you saw?
Two, but not back to back, so I drove in, drove back, drove out, drove back.
They must love you there.
Oh yeah, especially since I don't pay, because I've got the card, the unlimited card. So I just turn up. I particularly annoy the people at the food counter by not buying any food, because you can buy tickets at the food counter. And so you walk in the door and there's a massive queue and you think, losers, and just walk straight over to the food counter and get a ticket. Then they're actually really offended when you don't want anything.
Yeah.
And they seem to not actually know how to swipe a Cineworld card properly. I mean, so obviously I think they just put the people who've just got the job, they get sent to the Haagen-Dazs counter.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Ben and Jerry's, whatever.
The Cineworld staff aren't great, to be honest, but...
They're a step up from the average JD Sports person who helps you get the shoes, but or trainers.
Yeah.
Oh God. Oh. My shoe size is bigger than their IQ. Anyway.
Anyway.
Yes, this week.
this week, and there's a couple of bits of news from the week. We'll talk about the Oscars for a change.
Yeah, because we never do that.
No. they've finally done come to the senses and changed the song category, which we suggested weeks and weeks ago when we talked about the changes that they made earlier.
So obviously they listened to us then, and because of us, they decided to pull the finger out.
Clearly. Mm. But I mean, everybody's been saying this for months, years, so...
So what is the actual rule now?
It's just like any other category, and
right,
they don't get scored individually. They'll get DVD of all the songs, and they'll pick the five favourites and rank them.
Right.
It's not rocket science.
God forbid
is
they didn't do that before. I mean, because it just doesn't make any sense to do it this way.
It was either that or get rid of the entire category, wasn't it? So,
which, well, we know where I stand on that one. just cut it loose.
Oh, there have been some great moments in the past, though.
Jon Stewart stopping the whole telecast so that Marketa Glover could come out and finish her thank you speech.
Yeah.
That's probably the best one for me. Well, he's a classy guy.
Yeah. And a little aside about the Oscars, Germany submitted Barbara, which is a Nina Hoss film for the foreign language.
Yeah, it's coming out.
Yeah, it's coming end of the month, I think.
Well, so, is this news because they're not going for the Hanukkah, or is the Hanukkah in French so they can't?
The Hanukkah is in French, but...
But they could, but it depends on who produced it, doesn't it? Because Hanukkah's directing and... So usually it's only Austria or Germany who can submit his films.
Yeah, because he's Austrian, right?
Yeah, it's all about it's all about creative control, and that comes down to the production side of it and the actual director as well. I think you can actually have a film that's directed by somebody who isn't from that country, but provided that it is proved that the rest of the creative control is from it. It's to do with the writing and the producers and what have you, but.
But France have got a problem because they've got to choose between Amour and Rust and Bone, which is the Odiard film.
Yeah, I can't see them, because the thing is, they're quite precious, which I think we would be if we weren't sending films that were just in Welsh. France are usually pretty precious about what actually they send to represent them.
Yeah.
And I was really quite surprised a few years ago when they sent Persepolis. And they didn't send Couscous, which was the favourite.
Yeah,
which you just thought it won their the Césars, and they didn't send it. And so quite often, the film that wins the Césars, they won't actually send. So it's not necessarily about the film that the Academy likes the best. It's about what's representing France. So I'd be surprised if they sent a Hanukkah film, they're allowed to. Because they couldn't send The Diving Bell and the Butterfly because it was directed by an American, it's American produced, and it's written by Ron Harwood.
Yeah.
So there was just nothing French. The only French thing about it was the cast and maybe some of the crew. I'm not sure, but
yeah, because White Ribbon was Germany, wasn't it?
Yeah, I don't understand. I mean, they got into a fight over that because the Austrians wanted to submit it. Austria wanted to submit it as well.
Yeah. Well, didn't win in any case, so.
Yeah, well, less said about that, the better.
So, yeah, the big news of the week is Venice has started.
It exists. It's still a city.
Yeah.
No longer under Austrian control, speaking of Austria.
It's still actually...
We don't write this stuff, honestly. That wasn't just like the worst pre-planned out segue ever. Oh, dear.
The history of Venice, I'm not that familiar with. It is dying though, right?
It's sinking, yeah.
But not before...
The city, not the festival.
But not before Terrence Malick's been again.
Right. Is he there?
He's there for his new film, To the Wonder, which doesn't sound all pretentious.
Sorry, I was just drinking something then. Nearly came out my nose. No, it doesn't, no.
It was booed. His films kind of usually are. It's kind of par for the course with him.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not everyone's cup of tea.
No. It's supposed to be like a companion piece to The Tree of Life, I think.
Oh my god.
I heard it called The Tree of Love. Because it's like a love...
Did we need a companion piece to The Tree of Life?
I think so.
Wasn't The Tree of Life a companion piece to 2001?
Yeah, maybe a little bit, about 50 years later.
Mm. I'm taking up 50 years of my brain.
But this has got Rachel McAdams in it, Olga Kurylenko, Ben Affleck.
I try and just know as little about stuff as possible, especially festival stuff, because inevitably I get excited for the prospect of it and then I just get annoyed when I actually see it, because festival stuff's usually pretty divisive anyway.
Yeah.
And so I only found out literally, it was either yesterday or the day before yesterday, that Olga Kurylenko was like A, in this film, and B, like the main person in it. And that interests me because I actually think she's got a bit of potential, especially from the Bond film she did.
Quantum.
More than the... Yeah, Quantum of Solace. She did more in that than the average... Well, than 99% of Bond girls do, acting-wise. So I would actually be quite interested to see her.
Well, she is actually the main person in this because, as we know, Adrian Brody, poor guy, thought he was the lead in The Thin Red Line and... turned out he wasn't. Apparently, Rachel Weisz is the victim of this time.
Right. I think Billy Bob Thornton got it in The Thin Red Line as well. He was supposed to be narrating it.
And it's, what is it, Caviezel who narrates it?
Everybody narrates it in the end, isn't it? You've got like Ben Chaplin. Can I just point out, random digression, how much I love Ben Chaplin in The Thin Red Line? Especially considering this is the guy from Game On. Anyway. So
nicely stopped there.
Yeah, I'm not going any further down that. Any Samantha Janus type digressions. So Olga Kay is the main girl in this then.
Yeah, and this is just kind of a love story, but kind of, I imagine there'll be little bits of narration in it as usual. So that was booed, but I think it's generally got good reviews.
Isn't that just like Gaelic hospitality? Giving a sound booing.
Yeah. I mean, the best film get booed, right?
Well, yeah. Roger Ebert booed 2046.
Yeah.
I think, yeah. And I remember, well, not the best film, but I think also a lot of Americans use the excuse of, oh, it's France, to boo stuff that they wouldn't normally dare do.
Well, yeah. Well, this isn't France, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But because remember, Cannes, Marie Antoinette got booed.
Yeah.
And I went on allociné.fr, and it's got four star reviews across the board in France, and it was released the week before. So
yeah.
None of the French journalists are booing that thing.
And it's their story, so they should know, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they should know about the Converse trainers. Right, so what else is happening? I saw a tweet from Wendy Ide saying that there's an Israeli film that's got everyone crying in the aisles.
Really?
Yeah. Have you not heard about this?
No.
So I'm teaching you something about Venice. I'll flip it up and see if I can see the name. But if that's true, then there are a lot of Israel's done very well over the last few years, getting Oscar nominations.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, they originally got in for the band's visit. Well, they would have got in for the band's visit. It got kicked out, and then they got in for Beaufort.
Waltz with Bashir? Was that them?
Yeah, and also, what's that Crash-type one that actually wasn't very good? It's like an interweaving storyline one a couple of years ago. The year that A Secret in Their Eyes went. Ajami.
All right. Well, the other main one is The Master, Paul Thomas Anderson's new film.
Who?
Yeah. this has got Joaquin Phoenix back from retirement. Was that ever serious?
Yeah, right. Yeah, whatever.
Loosely based.
I think he was retired the way that Michael Jordan was retired.
Yeah. Loosely based on a guy who founded Scientology and what happened to him. Which has already been shown, because it's weird that Venice have shown a film that's been shown somewhere else.
That is, it's not usually. Well, sometimes they do it, but not in competition.
No. But I think Paul Thomas...
Well, where's it shown? New York?
It's been shown everywhere, from coast to coast. And he always goes, like, apparently he did this with There Will Be Blood, and showed it just randomly, so one-off, like, kind of for the fans.
Right. Well, I'm actually surprised, because usually what Anderson does is he releases the film, normally, and then he takes it to Berlin after the fact, because Berlin don't have a problem taking films after the fact. So I'm actually just really surprised it's at Venice at all.
Yeah, they're usually year-end things with him as well.
Mm.
This is a little early for him.
Mm. So is Amy getting the Oscar nomination then?
Maybe. I heard good things.
I'm hearing what little that seeps through the defences has been good.
I don't think it's going to be an easy sit though.
Well, when is Paul Thomas Anderson film when easy sits?
Also at Venice, this is for you by the way.
Right, okay.
Suzanne Bier's new film.
Oh yeah, the Trina Dahome.
The what?
Yeah. Trina Dahome, she's in it. She was the mother in Royal Affair. She was in Hovland last year in A Better World. Oh, the beautiful last in A Better World. And Paprika's in it, isn't she?
Yes.
Dogma Queen Paprika Steen, who she's got very good performances out of in supporting twice before, or super performances. She was in Open Hearts, super in that, and The One and Only. So I'm extremely looking forward to Mrs. Steen.
And applause, Steen, no? In
that. That wasn't beer.
Oh, okay. Mm. But this is called Love Is All You Need, and Pierce Brosnan's in it.
Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. I assume he's going to be speaking English.
I would have thought so.
I mean, he can't even sing. I doubt he can speak a foreign language.
No. But he's her type of bloke. Because she likes Mads. Mads is her type of bloke, so I'm not surprised at all she likes she'd go for someone like Pierce. So
so that's a rom-com in Italy, set in Italy. Might be why that's there.
Mm. And I don't mind that she's going back to the rom-com, because she sort of made her name with that, with The One and Only. It was like really one of the biggest commercial successes in Sweden, like, ever, in the late 90s, and then so we know her from like these more serious type, like your Brothers and In a Better World and all those sort of films.
Mm.
So it should be interesting to see her go back to something a bit lighter.
Yeah. Okay. So that's all the main ones that I could pick out. Maybe a little bit sparse.
Mm. Also, we'll see some others come through, I would have thought, during the week.
Like maybe that Israel one.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah, if that picks up steam.
Mm.
Mm.
Okay.
Right, so for a few weeks, Cal's been like asking or encouraging anyone who's listening to sort of get in contact and ask us a question or what have you. And I suddenly realised that we have had someone who's been like who's been commenting, and I've just been responding to him on my blog rather than actually just bringing it up here. So a guy asked me a question about the blog a couple of weeks ago, and instead of replying to it, I'm just going to address it here. And it is, why on earth haven't I seen either of the Expendables movies? And the answer, quite simply, is that I'm not a twat.
Careful.
No, the serious answer to that is quite simply, nobody I knew wanted to go and see it, and that's usually how it works with films such as those. That I'll get, because I do see the more than a few Nicolas Cage films, depending on who I'm going with.
But if you really wanted to see it, you could have seen it. But well, you that's don't. The point. But you're not.
I
that
don't.
Bothered.
But it's the sort of film that the sort of films that if I knew someone who wanted to go, I'd probably see him.
Yeah.
But I don't. So
did he say why?
Yes.
He was surprised.
Or how? it was either why or how. Yes, so from there, we're going to do something a bit new this week. Before we get into our reviews, we are going to be, I'll just run through what we're reviewing this week.
Mm-hmm.
Reviewing Total Recall, A Few Best Men, The Watch, The Myth of the American Sleepover, Wreck 3, and Possession. And I thought it would be quite interesting to sort of any sort of like disclosure, so any preconceptions, is preconception corner, if you will. So any sort of biases or preconceptions about any of the films, we're going to just let it be out there, get rid of them now, expiate those feelings.
Just right. Let it out.
Yeah, so I'm going to admit to an unfortunate man crush, semi-man crush on Kevin Bishop, which because he was very funny in a couple of French films about 5 or 10 years ago, so... I'm forever going to be have a soft spot for him for that. I'm not the biggest fan of the original Total Recall.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just put that out there. So because it's very trashy, and I'm not I haven't got any sort of like deep love for the original for that.
I have a little bit of a bias towards horror films. If they aren't bad, and also, I don't think you're gonna like any film this week. That's my prediction.
Right, okay. That's the prediction,
mm-hmm.
Right? And I'll just go through this. I wasn't expecting beforehand to like The Watch at all. That's because the trailer didn't look great. But and disclosure, don't like Jonah Hill. Thought Richard, how do you even say
something? Are you dear?
Yeah, I thought, I've never seen The It Crowd, but I saw him being interviewed when Submarine came out, and I thought he was just the most pretentious guy I'd ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
So that's the only thing I know about it. So I've already got a sort of narked, you love Goddard type vibe on him.
Well, he loves Wes Anderson.
That's the big
thing.
Well, who doesn't?
But anyway, yeah. So, any more? Yeah.
Myth of the American Sleepover. It's just one of these. No preconceptions whatsoever. It just looks lame. And Wreck 3, I didn't even bother seeing.
Yeah.
And The Possession, I do have a soft spot for Keir Cedric.
Yeah. As do the Golden Globes and SAGs, evidently. 7 years
auto-nomage. Auto-nomage, yeah. Yeah, they've got more of a soft spot for her than they do Mary Louise Parker and In Weeds and. Who was the other one who used to get nominated all the time? Patricia Arquette in Medium.
Yeah.
Those are
Glenn
like
Close and Damages.
The usual suspects. Right, so we're going to start off with Total Recall.
Yeah.
Which you haven't seen, so I'm just going to have to fly solo on this one.
I haven't seen, and I haven't seen the original either, so...
Okay, right. Okay, also double the fun.
Yeah, you can trash something and I won't care.
yeah, okay, so this is, I'm just looking at the clock to see how quickly I can get this done. No, I'm kidding. This is Total Recall. It's based pretty much on the film, which is loosely based on a Philip K. Dick short story. Colin Farrell is a guy who's a lowly construction worker, and he sees an advert for a company called Recall, who because it's so depressing there, he's from the colony and he's in this naff job and they get naff pay, and he's for some reason he's married to Kate Beckinsale. So the setup is that there's this company that offers like a virtual holidays where they implant memories for you of like the so you can go there and have this like amazing like fake fantasy history which you will believe as being totally real. And so he's bored enough with his and disenchanted enough with his life and his stupidly improbably good-looking wife. So he goes to Recall when he's bored, and he's been having dreams about Jessica Biel, haven't we all? He's about having dreams about being on the run with Jessica Biel, and you can tell that they're sort of like, being hunted by as a member of the Resistance, because you've got the Chancellor, who's in charge of Britain, and he's a git, obviously. And so you've got the Resistance in the colony. And he's been having dreams about this. So he goes there and he chooses the secret agent like package. And just as he's being injected, the guy says, we just got to check and make sure that none of the stuff you told us is actually true. Otherwise, you'll end up being a vegetable. And so it all checks out. And then as the syringe is being pressed and the liquid is going into his veins, the guy says, "You lied to us. You're a spy." And then, within about 4 seconds, he yanks the intravenous thing out, and the room is covered with about 20 drones from the police. And Farrell just kills them all and goes home to Beckinsale, where it turns out that she's actually not his wife, and she's just been looking at she's been spying on him, and then she tries to kill him, and then suddenly he's on the run and he doesn't know who to trust and he can't remember and all of his memories.
This is tiring.
Yeah, it's directed by Len Wiseman, who did the Underworld films with his wife Kate Beckinsale, and it feels as if, because in the original film Sharon Stone's only got a handful of scenes, she's the wife, and then you've got a separate character played by Michael Ironside who's like the guy hunting him down, and so in this they've sort of combined those two roles together. So you have him as his wife, who's the secret agent as well,
right?
And then she hunts him down, and I'm sure it wasn't written this. I'm sure it was already written this way before Wiseman came on board, but it just feels like he's given his wife this expanded out role just for no other reason.
Yeah.
And the most disappointing thing about this is that it looks like a complete hack job. Did you see Star Trek? The J.J. Yes. Abrams one. Okay. Well, you know how when they use anamorphic lenses, you have the lens flares, which like, go vertically, the coloured bits of light that go vertically across the screen when a light's flashed directly at the camera. It's a cinematographic flaw, but it's just a necessary evil because what happens when you use the lens. And J.J. Abrams did in that, and especially with... what's the other film we did? Super 8. He instructed his cinematographer to capture as many as possible, and then in certain circumstances, digitally recreated some more, because he just thought it looked cool. Whereas I just thought he was being a complete hack. And in this, the lens flare after lens flare after lens flare, it's just completely completely distracting. And every single time, it just makes you think, can you get someone who can shoot this properly? And he actually has someone who can shoot this properly, because he's got the guy who shot Collateral.
Oh, wow.
with Dion, it was Dion Beebe and this guy. And he's also Tony Scott's cinematographer. He did Man on Fire and Deja Vu. And it just looks like the biggest piece of crap because of all these lens flares. And it's just so jarring and takes you out of it all the time. And when you've got this convoluted plotting on top of that, it's just doubly annoying.
He is an action director, though. He's done Underworld. I've not seen Underworld. Have you?
I've seen the first one.
I mean, is that competent?
I don't remember. Yeah, it's fine. It didn't make me want to watch any of the rest of them, but it was all right.
Yeah.
This is getting a really bad reception, and I think it's getting a bad reception because people have got quite a lot of, like...
I think it's getting
the original wasn't serious, and the original was like had a lot of like Bond lines, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, like cause, his wife's hardly in it in the first one, and so she's like fighting with the Jessica Biel character in the original, and he pulls the gun on her and she goes, "You wouldn't kill me, we're married," and he shoots her and says, "Consider that as a divorce," and so it's like that's the sort of thing why it's fun.
It's got no self awareness at all.
Oh, it's got self awareness. It's just trying to be fun, and it's trying to be. It knows it's a B movie, and it's trashy, and it's got all this like sex and nudity because it's a Paul Verhoeven film. Whereas this, it feels like they want to make Source Code,
yeah,
and they want to make just a 12A. Want to make as much money as possible with like a night with like an intriguing time travel, but a intriguing concept. I'm thinking more like in terms of Source Code for that. And it's almost as if this isn't the right story. You're taking like a film that was really trashy and had lots of like really pulpy, and you're stripping all that away, and you're just like leaving the genre elements of it. And it doesn't really work in terms of that. So I think people miss the sort of like camp value or the sort of fun value of it, yeah. All, and that's why it's good. I think in its own right as an action film, it's fine. It's a thoroughly decent watch. It does what it says on the tin. I think it's a bad film. I think it's got certain things that are bad about it, to do with the style and what have you. But
the reviews, I think, are probably harsher because people don't seem to want this to be remade so soon. It's only been 20 years and it's on TV quite a lot, and I think,
yeah, and it didn't necessarily need redoing.
Well, it didn't. We'll stop.
No, no, and
nothing just, from that. It's not a significant film. It doesn't need remaking.
No,
at all.
No. And I think just little thing, like, why are you casting Jessica Biel and Kate Beckinsale? They're virtually interchangeable in terms of their appeal. Yeah. It's like if you're casting a film with a woman, and then you had Orlando Bloom and Rupert Friend as the
you're
guys.
You're not covering any bases, are you?
No. I mean, it's anyway, but yeah. So I do think they miss chances to make. I think some of the stuff they do is fine. I think there's a couple of nice set pieces. There's one very nice set piece that relies on something that's been set up before. If you're going to go in a different direction from the original and take out the and go more serious and take out the fun and go more, then there are some more interesting ways you could have gone, but they just don't have any interest in doing that, and they're just some. I can kind of see why there's a negative reaction, because they don't really try and do anything interesting with it. But I think in its own right, it's okay. It's, don't get me wrong, okay. It's not good.
Score out of 10?
But right. 5. Totally average.
Okay.
Right. So from that to a film which are we going to get to 5 out of 10? It's A Few Best
Let's
Men,
see, shall we?
And I will let Cal do the rundown.
Well, this is directed by Stefan Elliott, who did The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert, time ago now.
Yeah, Easy Virtue as well.
And Easy Virtue, which starred Jessica Biel, second mention.
First time she was good in anything.
So this is different to The Adventures of Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. It's kind of a comedy modelled on the style of humour that's in The Inbetweeners.
Yeah.
Sort of crass. And the setup is that David, who's played by Xavier Samuel, great name, has gone on holiday, fallen in love with an Australian girl, Mia, played by Laura Brent. They're getting married, so he flies from Britain to Australia, taking his 3 best men with him. I don't think one of them is actually the single best man, are they?
No.
It's all of them. They're Tom, played by Chris Marshall, Graham, played by Kevin Bishop, and Luke, played by Tim Draxel. And they're typically not very well behaved. The first thing they do is they go and buy some weed from this local drug dealer they found online, and then during the wedding they get really silly and mess things up. Olivia Newton-John is in this.
I cannot believe it's Olivia Newton-John. It just completely shocked
me.
I was watching it, and I was thinking, I wonder, cause I had no idea who she is. I thought, I wonder if you're actually, because she's supposed to be the mum, she's supposed to be getting on in years a little bit. I thought, I wonder how good looking you were in your youth. And then I go on IMDb and find out it's Olivia Newton-John. I was like, what?
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
So she's the mother of the girl that he's marrying, and her father is a senator who's trying to convince this party whip to let his daughter take over his role as senator.
I wonder how accurate that could possibly be in terms of Australian politics. I highly doubt you can just give your daughter the seat.
Yeah.
Unless it's somewhere like where I live, where whoever puts their name is just going to get in if you're a Tory. How delightful.
All right, a few best men. Start us off. Is it funny?
I think there are certain moments which are funny, but I think they're too few and far between.
Yeah.
In order to keep the film from falling apart and dragging for long periods. I think for the first couple of reels, there are a couple of funny lines, but that's all they are, funny lines. And
I'd struggle to remember any.
Well, it's like when they go to the drug dealer's house and they say, what are you doing? Haven't you seen? And he gets out of the car. What are you doing? Haven't you seen Wolf Creek? Just little stuff. Like, it's just nothing hilarious. Just like funny lines. A couple of funny lines. But there's that aside, that's about it for the first like half an hour or so.
I don't think this type of humour is... It's definitely not to my taste.
No, where
it's basically about obliterating social etiquette.
Yeah. I think the one thing that I found the most amusing, and I didn't expect to, even as it was unfolding, I didn't expect to find it funny. I did find Kevin Bishop's best man speech probably the funniest thing in the film.
Mm.
In terms of awkward, and I usually don't like cringe.
Yeah.
In terms for my humour, which that's why it was surprising me that I was laughing, but I think that was the maybe it's just my bias towards him. No, that was the thing I found the funniest in the film.
Seems a little lame with you get like Olivia Newton-John's character snorts coke, and it's all about getting people to do things that they wouldn't normally and thinking that's funny.
And this is I think we had one of these last week. I can't remember which one it was, but this is a film where if you've seen the trailer, you've seen the film.
Yeah,
they put a lot of it in there, and there are some like chuckle worthy things outside of it, but then they've got to pad it out for 90 minutes, and so it's just.
I mean, I did laugh when the sheep fell over. Although, where they go with the gross out stuff is not good.
No. That's the thing. I mean, I was like more waiting for like a few witty. The few witty lines that are in there is what I appreciated.
Yeah,
I wasn't. The gross out stuff just fell on sort of crossed arms for me. But no, I couldn't recommend this to anyone I know. Let's put it that way.
I did like Chris Marshall. I think he's quite funny. Kevin Bishop's quite funny.
I should have put that in the preconceptions. Corner. I don't like Chris Marshall.
Well, you mentioned that last week, so.
Yes.
But you still not like him.
No. No. No, I haven't got there yet. I suppose the thing I didn't like about. I didn't dislike him in this specifically, but I disliked some of the how obvious and beating over the head with the subtext his character is. So that was some of the writing I didn't like. It was just really obviously banging over your head and vocalising exactly what's going on between him and his best mate.
Yeah.
And it's just all a bit heavy-handed. But
it's got... Hmm. There seems to be like a tendency lately as well with there being like gay characters, like gay gangsters and gay drug dealers, as if that's funny. Because they're supposed to be alpha male.
Yeah, or sort of like playing against conventions.
Yeah. Well, this is all the film is. It's playing against conventions. But it's just kind of lazy.
Yeah, and there's the whole... She's pretending to be a lesbian just to annoy her dad, basically.
Mm. That this is Rebel Wilson. Best name ever.
Oh yeah, she that was one of the funny lines. Like when the guy turns up at the house and the mother-in-law-to-be just immediately throws her arms around him and she says, "You're making him uncomfortable. He's English." But I mean, again, if that's the sort of like one of the two funniest lines of the first half hour of the film, you are kind of in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it marries the culture quite well. He seems to know Australian culture from Priscilla, and this seems a little genuine at least. But
yeah, but the whole like Ramsay thing, like the we don't know. I mean, I have no idea how Australian politicians market themselves, or if that's just complete ridiculous. If that's just complete ridiculousness, I've no idea. But it's not funny either way.
I always see this and think of Strictly Ballroom, which is really early in Baz Luhrmann's career. But it's almost as if Baz Luhrmann moved on to better things, and this guy's still in 1994.
I don't know. I don't think anything's ever beaten the guy sliding across the ballroom towards Tara Marici. I think that's Baz's best moment.
Oh no, I think that's fine, but I think it's of the time, and this feels. A bit
mean
dated.
The tone,
yeah,
the tone as well, yeah.
Do you want to hazard a score?
Four tops, probably three.
It's C minus for me.
Yeah, I think probably four. I mean, I did laugh a fair bit, but I can't say it was even average. It was subpar for me.
Yeah.
Right, so from subpar, we go to The Watch, which is one of the biggest releases this week, actually. Ben Stiller,
Vince Vaughn,
Richard A.
Jonah Hill.
Yes, Richard Unpronounceable. is it Ayoade? Is that how you say it?
Richard Unpronounceable.
Yeah.
Richard Ayoade Goddard. Or something.
Ayoade. Whatever. Whatever. So this is pretty simple setup, especially in comparison with Total Recall. The setup is that Ben Stiller is one of the leading citizens in a small Ohio town. He is he's the manager of the local Costco, and he's on the local council. Creates a load of clubs just to give himself something to do while he's not impregnating his wife, played by indie queen Rosemary DeWitt.
Mm-hmm.
And so he, after his security guard is murdered in mysterious circumstances, he forms a local neighbourhood watch to which only three people turn up. One is Vince Vaughn, the other's Hill, and the other's Richard. and who he's very pleased about because, as he informs us in the opening voiceover, he has a Korean woman that he knows, and he has an Asian friend, and then
this offended me.
He'd been working on getting. He was in the market for a black friend, and then so when Richard turns up, he's extraordinarily pleased. Yeah, so they set up the neighborhood watch, and then not before too long, they discover that there's an alien invasion happening. This is all done in the trailer, so I mean, this is another trailer film where they put everything up until the last 10 minutes in the trailer. So it turns out there's an alien invasion happening in Ohio, and who are you going to call? Not the eight policemen who are in the town, and so the onus falls on the neighborhood watch. So, as the person that I went to see this film with describes it, it is essentially the faculty meets the Burbs.
I've not seen the Burbs, but I think the faculty is pretty terrible.
I think the faculty... Well, I've got a moderate soft spot for anything with Famke Janssen in it.
a word on the whole Asian thing. I don't think it's, like, racist, but I think it's too... racially conscious, like why is he?
It's like we were saying,
like his character because he says, "I have Asian."
Is it like we were saying with Ted? How the humor in it comes from, look, this guy's being racist, as opposed to just a sort of like, I don't know. It's kind of like on 30 Rock where Liz Lemon can't tell black guys apart, and that's like a running joke.
Yeah,
on there. So is it? I just don't know how to pitch it. If you want to say it's racist, it is racist, I guess.
I don't think it's racist. I just think it's too conscious about racism.
if you're just saying that it is, you are portraying someone who's being racist, and laugh at it if you will.
Yeah.
I don't know. I did laugh. I'm not gonna when they had that line, when he turns up and he's really pleased to see Richard Depp.
I don't remember that line, but.
Well, he literally turns up at the door and he's like really happy to see him. And you know why, and he doesn't. He's got surprised. Usually people aren't happy to see me. Yes.
I think this is funnier than A Few Best Men.
I'd go along with that, yeah.
I didn't expect to find it funny. I don't like Ben Stiller anymore. Not for a while.
I'm kind of there as well.
Vince Vaughn, mixed feelings about Vince Vaughn. Sometimes he's great, like in Lay the Favourite. Other times he just seems to be kind of on autopilot.
I think he was trying a bit too hard to be wacky and frenzied in this one. Because he was really frazzled in Lay the Favourite, and it really sort of meshed with the character. With this, it just sometimes you just thought he's like, it's Vince Vaughn shouting, and if he shouts a bit louder, he thinks it might get funnier. I like Jonah Hill more than I usually do. I usually really don't like him. I think he actually had most of the good lines in this. I liked Richard, surprisingly. I think he had some good comedic timing. I think my biggest problem with it was, I think the more I think about it, the more sexist I think it is, and borderline misogynistic. And when I was in there, the comment I made immediately afterwards that the longer it goes, the more it feels like it's been written by a 15-year-old boy. Mm. And it turns out it's Seth Rogen and his super bad co-screenwriter. And the longer it goes, the more it descends into sort of like, there's so many male genitalia things going on in this film.
Yeah, I don't get that.
It's really juvenile. And
It's a little simple. I feel like we've seen this before, and like Aliens in a Small Town. It's just like you said. It's The Burbs meets
the faculty.
It's all very like quaint and
the sort of humour it reminds me of. It's much better than this film. It's a bit of an insult to compare it to this, but the sort of humour it reminds me of, like Your Highness,
right?
That sort of like very low.
What, very Your Highness is better than this?
No, or Your Highness was absolutely horrendously atrocious. I thought this was okay. Because I did find myself laughing a fair bit.
I wrote down one line.
Did you?
Where he's talking about the guy who... they're talking about the green slime that's come off some aliens.
Right, and he's that's
the green slime that was next to the body of my friend that was killed. And he's like... Oh, did he win a Nickelodeon Kids' Choice Award?
Yes, yeah, that was one of the best lines. Yeah, there was about three of those type lines in the film where he sort of like turns to the person next to you and just start nodding. And I think because of that, there's enough goodwill to sort of carry it over, and it's the sort of film that's adequate while you're in there, but you within a week. Won't remember a thing about it.
And that's exactly what the studios want, so that you can just peddle this totally shit out again next year.
Totally disposable, undemanding, forgettable stuff.
Yeah. However, Rosemary DeWitt is in it more than two scenes, which we feared last week that she might...
Yeah, it felt like it might be a Julianne Moore in Children of Men. Let's put the whole role in the trailer.
What, kill her off after 10 minutes?
Well, yeah. Well, maybe. Or just that whole, her whole role is in the trailer, and make it seem like she's got a much bigger part than she actually does. I do think it's... There's a lot of, like... The portrayal of women is not great.
Their marriage.
It's very simplistic. It's very all to do with a lot of... apart from Jonah Hill's mother, who's in, like, it for 10 seconds, all the women are just... It's all to do with sex.
I don't get the whole frat party scene as well.
Orgy.
I don't know why that...
No, well, this is the thing. It's like, the Vince Vaughn, what's the worst thing that can possibly happen? Your daughter's having sex. Or might have sex with a guy. That's
I'm not even a guy.
Well, yeah. That's the a guy with a mat. Oh, but the worst thing is that, and also on top of that, the guy who might have an extremely large member. That's why I think it feels like it's been written by a 15-year-old boy. It's just
I did laugh
silly.
Though, that line. Where it's like I can wrap one hand around.
Yeah. But that thing, it's all to do with that. It all gravitates towards the male genitalia for the humour.
Yeah, which, it's a little bit obsessed, isn't it?
Which in some of it's funny, but I mean it does get a bit relentless, and it doesn't hold up to any kind of intellectual scrutiny.
The plotting's pretty.
Trite.
Yeah.
And I'd go with unbelievable with where they take it at the end. I don't buy that at all. But nevertheless. Yeah, it's five. It's five. It's fine. I wouldn't say decent. I'd say it's fine.
Okay. The next we've got... Have you got a little segue for this?
I'll bring it up. We will come back to The Watch. Okay, so the next film is The Myth of the American Sleepover. And this is an awfully titled film.
Yeah, I'd agree.
Awfully titled film. And it is about a group of young kids in a smallish town in America. Is it Michigan? They do mention the university they're going to. I can't remember. Anyway, so it's set in this like small town, and there's a lot of guys who are having a party, the school's about to restart at the end of the summer, and there's a load of sleepovers going on, and this is probably one of the biggest surprises of the year for me, because I really like this film, and I was shocked at the approach of it, and the approach of it. Made me, and this is a ridiculous comparison because I had zero expectations whatsoever. The comparisons I feel with this are Lucas Moodyson with Show Me Love,
right.
And Celine Sciamma with Water Lilies. It's that sort of Celine Sciamma-ish vibe / Sofia Coppola Virgin Suicides type feel to it.
Yeah.
Combined with
Dazed and Confused.
Yeah, combined with Moodyson's really honest portrayal of what you've seen 1,000 times before, and that's what Show Me Love is. Because Show Me Love is it's basically instead of boy meets girl in a small town, it's girl meets girl in a small town. That's the only difference. And what it does, it takes all these cliches, but gives them to you in an extremely honest way, and that's what's refreshing about it. And with this, it's exactly the same. And this is the comparison with The Watch is, in The Watch, there's a scene at the frat party where Jonah Hill turns up and he sees two hot twins and he tries to get them into bed. And that is just a joke. And whereas with this, it deals with that stupid cliche and actually presents it in an honest way from that point of view. And I'm also going to add that this little plot within Myth of American Sleepover, that's the worst thing about the whole film, that subplot about the lad trying to engineer a menage a twin. As it's put in the film.
I don't think it's that bad. I think his character is good. Because I think it's his character's about wanting to relive high school, whereas a lot of the others kind of want to leave it behind.
And then I think there's a visual...
Some are scared to leave it behind. It's sort of a spectrum.
Where I think this film switched in my brain that something different was going on is when he goes to pick up his sister from the high school. And then he stops and looks at the a load of pictures in like a trophy cabinet, and you can see the girl is obviously dumped him. He picks up the picture and folds it in half and looks at the other side of it, and you see him. There's a picture of like him in the background talking to the twins, and it's just like it's a visual thing, a way of conveying something that's going through his mind. And I was thinking, you don't see this. I mean, these sort of things, like when you have guys going to girls having sleepovers, guys egging people, and all this sort of stuff. It's all the sort of stuff you've seen all these times before. Yet it takes more because they're showing it you in a way that is actually believable and isn't done the cliched sex comedy teen American Pie type way, which has sort of cheapened it and made it less real. It's made it become a parody of itself. So that's why you have scenes like the twin scene in The Watch, because it's become a parody. It's like, oh. when actually it's really, in the girl in this says, you can't like both of us. And that's the realistic side of that joke thing that you put in a sex comedy just for a laugh. That's the realistic side of it. What do you think of the acting in this?
I think the standout is Claire Slomer.
Which one was she?
She's the one who does the dance.
Yes.
She's probably the person who's in it, has the most screen time. Probably. Maggie.
Maybe her and the lad. Because you've got her, she's... there's a lot of people who just... it's quite simple plotting, like so-and-so, and characterization so-and-so like so-and-so. So you got a lad who sees a girl in the supermarket and then spends the rest of the night trying to track her down. That, again, massive cliche.
Yeah, but that works out really well as well.
Exactly. And it's beautifully shot.
The way they kind of put it together, it's so sprawling and you never kind of sense where anybody is, which I usually don't like. But this kind of felt in keeping with the themes of the film, like disconnection, not really like aimless. But
I think it works as well because you're taking this really unusual approach, or not? No, it shouldn't be unusual, but it is unusual approach, and so that's sort of like ambling, shifting from one to the other slowly. It really works with the way that they're telling the story and the sort of story that they're telling, as opposed to like if you were having a sex comedy, then yeah, do the fast editing, blah 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 blah, and just shift it along and just go for the laughs. Whereas this, it needs more time to breathe, and it's really ethereal as a result.
Yeah,
which is the biggest shock.
Yeah, it's definitely unique.
Yeah, and I like the old guys. I like how some of the relationships are like with the lad. He says he's pretended that he's lost his virginity, and a girl reads his diary and finds out about it. And then so when he tells her, she goes, I knew. She says, I know, and he said, I knew you could tell. That's why I told you. And then the opposite happens later on. So there's a nice little way they tie these people together. Yeah, and the people. I like that they set these characters, and there's not necessarily that much background to them, but they let them make mistakes, and you can see them make mistakes, and the mistakes they're making are there just because they're not experienced. Like the thing with the lad and the twins, you can if you've got any experience, you can tell, you know which twin likes him.
Yeah.
Because he turns up, and which one is the one who says, yeah, let's go do this? That's obviously the one who likes you, but he's just not experienced enough, and he doesn't know enough in the world to know it. And so there's so much of this that it's just not what you see with this sort of thing, that it's really refreshing, and it's one that is already going up in my mind the more I think about it.
Yeah.
Even if some things don't ring true, like there's a scene where the guys are having a party downstairs, they're watching some porn, and then the sister of one of the lads is upstairs having a bath, and she leaves the door open. I don't really necessarily buy that.
Yeah. I don't buy the girl kissing a friend's boyfriend either. I think that was a low point.
No. There's a lot of diary reading. But it's forgivable because of what they're doing with it.
Yeah.
So I have a lot of goodwill towards this.
Yeah.
And
I'm surprised.
And for about 2 or 3 hours, it was in my top 10 for last year, until I saw some.
Yeah, because it is last year, sadly.
Yeah. And it's nowhere near me this week. I don't know. It must be on like 3 cinemas in London.
Yeah.
Type job.
This is... she's in my list of supporting actresses for last year. I think she's about 12, something like that. But
right.
But yeah, good film. B for me.
Yeah, 7 or 8. Originally 7. It's probably gonna go. Probably gonna go up to an 8.
Cool. Okay, what's next?
Wreck 3, please.
Oh wow. Okay.
Which I didn't see.
Well, so. You haven't seen the first one, which is actually good.
So this is gonna be the question for next week. Why haven't I seen any of the Wreck films?
So this is directed by Paco Plaza, best name ever. I think that's the third time I've said that today. Just so many good names. So this is the third installment of the Wreck franchise. It's called Wreck because those are the three letters you see when you're recording on a video camera.
Mm-hmm.
In the first installment, this woman, news reporter, went on a night with these firemen who take calls. I think they were substituting for police. So they get called to this apartment building. Somebody's acting strangely. It turns out they've been infected with something. They bite one of the firemen. And basically, if you get bitten, you turn into this flesh-eating zombie. So they eventually take over the entire apartment building. But for a few people.
This sounds like an allegory for people who like the Tree of Life on the internet.
Oh, God.
Anyway, do go on.
So that was the first film. This is found footage, by the way, so it's all from the perspective of this news reporter's camera. In the second film, it's the aftermath of that. The government are trying to preserve the outside world, contain the disease, but eventually, at the end of the second one, the disease gets out. Sorry to whoever hasn't seen the second one.
So this is the point where the Tree of Life makes the Sight and Sound top 250. Do go on.
So this is called Wreck. I don't think it's called Wreck 3. I think it's just called Wreck Genesis.
Right. So was the second one found footage as well?
Yes. Okay. So apparently there's going to be a fourth one called Wreck Apocalypse. Kind of neat on the DVD cover anyway.
Yeah.
So this has got a format at the beginning. It's got a format where it's like a wedding DVD. So it's like somebody's wedding. Like on the menu. Which is impossible, right? Because even if somebody found this video, they're not going to make it into a wedding DVD when it's got all this carnage on it. But anyway, it's got a wedding DVD format. Miguel and Zara's wedding, I just made them up, play, and that's what happens. And then it shows this wedding, and this film's set after the second one, very shortly after, I think. Somebody at the wedding's been bitten by a dog. The dog obviously has the virus because it's escaped. The virus has escaped from the apartment building. And then the same thing happens, but at a wedding. So it's all set at this wedding venue, which is like a stately home kind of place.
Mm-hmm.
Which also has sewers, weirdly. So the tagline for this, it's got a picture of the bride with a chainsaw in her hand in a sewer, and the tagline is, "You may now kiss the bride."
Right. I thought it was going to be "Till death do us part" or something.
Yeah, that would have been better, wouldn't it? But still, that gives you an idea of that they're going more for the...
What they're going for.
Gratuitous violence and like... And that's the problem with the film. It's got no decent story. They abandon the found footage about 15 minutes in.
Oh, really?
Which is unforgivable. Yeah, they get trapped in this kitchen and they have to go through the air vent. And he can't take it in the air vent. He just leaves it in the kitchen.
And then you start seeing it as a normal film.
Yeah.
That's terrible. Yeah. They're not even going to go follow through. They can't even follow through with the idea.
Exactly.
Dear.
And the second, I liked the first one. I think I gave it B-, but I think it was a little harsh. But the second one I thought was worse, but still okay. Barely okay, but okay. But this one is just...
Wet the bed?
Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. You get people...
People are booing at Can.
Yeah. They wouldn't care enough to boo at Can. It's worse than that.
But I mean, in my Malick allegory, people are now, the third one is people booing at Cannes for To the Wonder.
You get people like, you know, in horror films, you get people turning badass for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
And this happens in this. Like, she gets infected towards the end, a little bit of a spoiler, but
whatever.
But
I'm not going to say it.
But then she gets infected on her hand, and she's like, "Cut my arm off with this chainsaw. Just cut it off at the elbow." And I'm thinking, and then she just acts as if everything's normal afterwards. Like, she's not even in mourning for her arm or anything like that.
She can't still feel it.
It's just bizarre. It's a really, really bizarre film. It's only about 75 minutes. Not a great deal happens. It takes 20 minutes for the infection things to happen. I could tell you hardly anything about the characters. It's just really disappointing.
And sometimes that is, sometimes, because I go on about characterization quite a lot, obviously. Anyone who's listening to this podcast knows. But some, you can get around it if you still make it interesting. Like Myth of the American Sleepover, you don't really know a tremendous amount about the characters in that. But if you put them in situations that resonate,
you can interpret more from it.
Yeah, or you can project, or you can just go, oh yeah, I get it.
It's fine. More vital in a horror film to be invested in the character because they're in danger, like invested at the time, not afterwards.
Yeah.
Because it's life or death. So
I suppose it's like something like The Pact. You have little shorthands, like you find that she's a former junkie. You find that the mother's died, so immediately you've got these vulnerabilities that give you something to sort of like hold on to, an emotional state.
But they're not thrust in your face either.
Exactly.
You know?
But it's just left there, and so that sort of like fetters away and like allows you to get involved emotionally with the person and what's happening to them. So I take it nothing like that.
No.
No shading at all.
No. Bad.
Right. So rating. Oh, so your letter. Sorry, you give letters, don't you?
Rebel. D plus for me.
Okay. Right.
Okay.
So continuing the theme of horror films this week.
Lots of little segues this week, I think.
Yes. Yeah. It's almost as if we planned it.
Never.
The Possession, which is at the number one screen at the Cineworld tonight, with The Watch at number on screen two, which is just really surprised me. So that's why it's the main one tonight, because it is the biggest release, allegedly, according to Cineworld.
Do you think it'll win the box office battle?
Probably. It's done all right in America.
Yeah.
Made like 20 mil, over 20 mil in America.
Yeah. So is this me? Am I doing that?
Yeah, I think so.
So it's directed by Ole Bornedal, director of Deliver Us From Evil.
And IMDb are two films that I want to see but haven't actually got round to.
And that's one of them.
Yeah, IMDb, Maria Bonavie, who I love. So that's why it's on the to-see list.
Okay. So this is starring your favourite, Keira Sedgwick.
She's one of them.
And Jeffrey Dean Morgan, who's been in horror films lately.
Isn't he Mr. Mary Louise Parker?
Is he?
I think he's like father of kids or something.
Well, he's very dashing anyway.
Was he in Watchmen?
I don't know.
I think people liked him in Watchmen.
I didn't burden myself with that one. So, Keira Sedgwick and Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Their characters are recently separated parents, as we get like beat around the head with quite a bit in this film. So their parents are Stephanie and Em, which I assume is Emily. Two young girls are kind of around, I think Em must be about 6 or 7, and Stephanie's around like 10. So in the first scene of the film, we get a completely different character, this older woman who's armed with a hammer or a knife?
Something, it's like a hammer, yeah.
I remember thinking, that's not going to do anything. So she's ready to smash up this wooden box with foreign engravings on it, which is making strange kind of chanting sounds. And then all of a sudden she kind of gets killed by what seems to be an apparent kind of poltergeist. She gets thrown around the room and her limbs get kind of
contracted.
Yeah. Does she die?
Yeah. I think no, because remember she's in the
that's her
the yard, yeah. The yard cell. Yeah, she ends up getting a head smacked
like
into the table.
Paralyzed, maybe something like that.
Yeah.
So obviously there's something amiss with this box. And the next we see the box, it's in a yard sale, and the Jeffrey Dean Morgan's taking his kids to this yard sale. The younger girl, M, takes a liking to the box, asks her dad to buy it, which he does. And shortly after, she kind of hears things from the box and undergoes changes. She gets more aloof. And it becomes clear that she has been possessed by a demon.
Hmm.
This is produced by Sam Raimi. And mm-hmm. I think you can tell. Would you agree?
Yeah, kind of. It's in his sort of realm. It's not a surprise that having seen it, it's got his name attached to it.
Yeah. It's like, have you seen Drag Me to Hell?
I turned off about halfway through, but I've seen the beginning of it, yes.
Right. Because I think this is similar. It's very Tales from the Crypt, kind of. It's like a short story. It's been made into a film.
Right. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. One thing I sort of like... there's a cultural thing that I don't think... too many people pick up on. Jeffrey Dean Morgan's character is a basketball coach, and he's been touted for the North Carolina job. Now, in terms of college football, that is like being asked to manage Arsenal.
It's really
like,
good.
You know, like, it's like one of the four. If the four powerhouses in college basketball are like North Carolina, Duke, Kansas, and Kentucky. And,
well, I didn't know that.
So it's like in terms of football, it's like Manu, Liverpool, Arsenal, Chelsea.
Yeah,
getting one of those.
Yeah.
So it is a massive deal. So this is the thing: they've been separated, and he's got this job offer that the coach is retiring, and he's going to move to North Carolina. But that's the thing: there's no way he's turning it down. That's the point.
Yeah.
There's no way. Which culturally the Americans would get straight away. If you don't know anything about college basketball, you won't know that. Let's put it this way: Michael Jordan went to North Carolina.
Yeah.
Second mention from Michael Jordan this week.
But from LA to North Carolina, right?
No, I mean he went to college in North Carolina.
Oh, he went. Oh, right. Okay. Yeah. But before the NBA.
Yeah. And I was really impressed with Morgan actually. The longer it went.
Yeah.
Which surprised me.
The acting's generally very good, I would say.
The girl, for, the younger girl. For a horror film. Yeah. The younger girl's got a bit of the Anna Paquin's about her.
What, like, bratish?
No, I mean, piano. I mean, back in the piano, I mean, she just, sort of look and sort of, like, things she's doing.
Yeah.
With the acting.
Yeah, I mean, she's fine. I mean, it's convincing. She's scary.
Yeah. I was less sold on the direction. You know, there's a lot of scenes that sort of like were jumped out of for no good reason, and it just felt choppy. And then you'd have these like random aerial shots of like houses. And
yeah,
stuff like that.
The crane shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it all seemed a bit. It didn't fit because it's got quite a claustrophobic feel. So maybe I don't know if he was trying to break that up. I think, but why would you want to break that up? Surely you'd want to amp that up.
Yeah,
it's one of the better things the film's actually got going for it. Kira,
the thing with the marriage. I think it works in terms of getting you on his side. It's a little bit heavy-handed with the whole abuse thing.
Yeah,
which never gets followed up.
No, and he has the unforgettable line and undeliverable line of "Stay away from my kids' teeth."
Oh yeah,
because the guy's a dentist. The guy that Kira's now seeing is a dentist.
And then where it goes with that as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I thought this was all right. It's decent. But what I tend to find with these sort of films is that they tend to, like The Exorcist, I mean, The Exorcist of Emily Rose is a prime example of something. It wants to go for like the visual of seeing the girl's limbs crumple up and the girl being possessed. And with The Exorcist of Emily Rose, that all happens. I think it's Jennifer Carpenter. And you have all the whole, this is based on a true story, and what have you.
Mm.
And the best film I've seen on possession in the last 10 years, or maybe even longer, is Requiem.
Yes.
A German film. And that is nothing. That is the same, based on the same true story as Exorcism of Emily Rose, but it's all about the decision of whether she takes a medical or a theological
It's more about
solution. It's how you come about this. Are you going to go medically or are you going to go with religion to solve this?
Yeah.
And that's the most interesting thing with this. It's more going towards the sort of, the horror set pieces of someone being possessed and amping it up and what have you.
But this is and more. So
you are getting into the Exorcist territory.
This is more towards the Exorcist. It's more literary. Yeah. It's more about morals than faith.
And the twist on it, and the thing you haven't really seen before, is that most, if not all, of the films I've seen about possession, they're always, and the last one I saw was The Rite, with Tony Hopkins.
Was that
it's
good?
Always, it's all right.
Okay.
It's all right. It's always about Christianity. Specifically Catholicism, obviously.
Yeah,
Exorcism. And the twist on this is that it's Judaism, and it's that's the intrigue factor to it. I mean, the fresh factor to it is that it's not the power of Christ compels you.
I can imagine that there's some Jewish people thinking, "Oh my God, this is like not us." But possibly. I think it works for the film. I think it does give it a little added twist to it.
Yeah,
that's different.
Yeah, next we were mooting our ideas for the podcast, and I said, well, we might do some four-word reviews. But we might try that, because I saw that in I think it was a magazine used to do that. And if I was doing a four-word review for this, it would be The Exorcist for Schmendrix, just for the Jewishness.
I would just say, don't open the box. That would be my review.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, definitely. But no, this was I think in terms of recent horror films, it's I don't think it was as good as The Pact.
No, I think it's probably second the horror film of the year, which isn't saying much. I mean, there aren't many good films. We're lucky if we get one good horror film a year.
But it's the best one this week in comparison with three.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed that Kira really didn't have anything to do. Yeah, as you pointed out, some of the characterisation is a bit spotty. But I think generally it's well acted enough to elevate the material. And I hate the end. I really hate the end.
But that's another right. That's another Raimi thing.
Leave the sequel open.
No, I don't think it's anything to do with that. I think it's just all actions have consequences kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it was.
It's about curses as well. At the end of the day.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't a fan. Let's just put that way.
You could tell, though, couldn't you?
I'll put it this way. I rolled my eyes very hard at the end.
I'd give this a B minus.
Yeah, I'm thinking probably 6
yeah.
out of 10. So it's C plus ish.
Okay.
Right, so one thing we talked about, we might do the forward reviews. One thing we are doing this week, new feature, is it's the sort of a cinematic equivalent of Shag, Marry, Kill. So we're going to pick one film from the week that you'd have a one-night stand with, watch again right now tonight.
Yeah.
One you'd marry, so watch every weekend for the rest of your life, and one you'd kill, i.e. burn all the negatives and no one would ever get to see it ever again. So which of the films would be your one night stand for tonight you'd watch right now if you could? It's got to be a different one for each.
Yeah, can't have your cake and eat it.
No.
what I would watch again tonight.
Yeah.
The Possession.
Right. Okay. My one night stand would be Total Recall, because I'd have Jessica Biel and Beckinsale to look at for.
Fair enough.
An hour or two. So for every weekend for the rest of my life, Myth of the American Sleepover. I'd marry a Myth of the American Sleepover.
Snap.
Right, yeah. And Kill. This is a tough one.
I would kill A Few Best Men, because...
can I kill A Few Best Men and then you can kill Rec 3?
Well, I was between that and The Watch, because I was thinking The Watch happens every year, you know?
Right.
So nobody would miss it, would they?
So, yeah, this is the thing. Burn all the cinematic negatives so nobody would ever see it again. I'd probably go with, in those terms, I probably would take The Watch over A Few Best Men, actually.
Yeah. I wouldn't get rid of Rec, because then what about the poor people who, if 4's good, they can't see 3?
Yeah. Well, you do A Few Best Men and I'll do The Watch then. I could do without the sexism being in the world.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
the iconic words.
This is a foreword.
Yeah.
We have a blog.
We do.
It's moveforpodcast.blogspot.com. We have a Twitter.
We have other blogs as well.
We have other blogs, ultimatealec.com for me, and inthemoveblog.blog.co.uk for...
Which will house this and for 3 weeks. And then after that, you can download to your heart's content blog.
Shelf life, 3 weeks.
3 weeks, and then I have to get rid, because I don't have the space for anything else.
Because
they're too big.
Yeah.
So if you want to download some of the others, you can get us on Go.
Yeah, I've got a full thing list of all 13. Well, it's 14 now, but it was 13 last week. Episodes right. On my blog. It's the latest post. We have a Twitter, Move for Podcast, and we're on iTunes. And if anybody wants to ask any more questions, like why Shep hasn't seen...
Wreck.
What else haven't you seen? What's like the worst thing that you haven't seen? The most famous thing?
It's not worst, but probably something like a Tarkovsky. Because I've given up on him, kind of.
And nothing, Melancholia.
Why have I given up on Lars von Trier? That'd be a good topic for a whole 90-minute special.
Yeah, and you could talk for 90 minutes about that, no doubt.
Yeah, the trouble would be actually trying to let you get a word in edgeways.
So next week we've got... Well,
finally, that sound that you can hear is my claws being sharpened. So Preconception Corner is going to be full next week before Anna Karenina.
Will Keira Knightley get the Shep approval? This is the big issue.
Well, the big issue, judging by the early reviews, is that my Preconception Corner is going to be it's more about Erin Johnson than Keira Knightley, in all honesty.
Well, I heard good things, not about him, about the film.
Yeah, I think in general the word is good, but
not for him.
Basically. We've also got next week's going to be we can officially say that I can promise I'm going to see the new Adam Sandler film, and I think Cal is as well. But my thought process is, if we reviewed LOL with Miley Cyrus just for laughs, then you've got an Adam Sandler film that American film critics were threatening to call in sick so that they wouldn't be able to review. I think we've got to give this one a look.
Well, I was just about to say that this next week's going to be classier than this week, but no, you mentioned that.
Yeah, Judge Dredd and Adam Sandler film.
Well, actually, Judge Dredd's on 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. So
right, and I'm sure we can have some preconceptions and biases for Lawless.
Yeah. We've also, we're definitely going to see those.
Yeah.
There's a couple of art house ones. It depends on how it goes, but Taboo and the Queen of Versailles. Maybe possibly. Around, may not be.
We'll see what else is around by us.
Because we're both busy next weekend, aren't we?
Yes, it's another year on the clock. is rapidly approaching. So I'm going to be away for part of the weekend. You're away for part of the weekend. So we're going to squeeze what we can in, and we should have some good stuff.
I'm going to see Lady Gaga in London.
Nice. I know someone who's literally trying to give away a ticket to see her in Paris.
When was that for? Has that happened?
I don't know. I think it's afterwards. I don't think it's yet. Well, she's not actually trying to give it away. She's trying to get someone to pay for the cover price of the ticket.
So why can't she go?
I think she can go, but she had two tickets and can't find anyone to go with. Yeah, the travails of... oh, God. I've just realised what's going to happen. Cue the Lady Gaga.
I did think that, but then I thought there's not like going to be a closing music. It's all a bit in your face.
Yeah. Well.
So, I'll go easy on Kira.
Yeah, well, we'll see.
I don't think
it's
going to be...
We've been surprised before. Let's put it that way.
I don't think it's going to be a Duchess situation anyway. I think it might be.
No. No, and to be in all honesty, I was depressed when I slated the Duchess. I didn't enjoy doing it. And this is my favourite book. So we could have a Bright Star situation where it looks completely atrocious and then it ends up being one of the best films of the year. So let's keep it positive.
For a change.
Yeah.